Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here again this week and really looking forward to our show. This is a great time of year, and pretty much everybody listening in is going to have good weather this time of year. I'm actually calling in this week from Vegas. I'll be back in Hawaii next week. And then Maryland. So we are going to be all over here. So today, instead of splitting up our show, doing half real estate and then half self-help and community issues, we're going to go ahead and we have a wonderful guest on who is based in Maryland and in the mortgage industry, been in the mortgage industry for years. So we're going to, you know, there's so many community efforts that come through that and with everything going on. So we're going to dedicate this show today to specifically the mortgage business, and if you're buying or selling a home, tips on how to decide which lender to use, which loan to use, because it's inundating today if you haven't been through it a few times. And even if you've been through it, sold a few homes, bought a few homes, so many changes have taken place. So it's really, really wonderful to be able to have Steve Lovelett, he's an owner with Mortgage One in Maryland, have him on today to give us lots of tips and some advice and different avenues to find the best deal for you. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Steve Lovelett. Steve, thanks for coming on today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And I understand you're in another state temporarily, huh? Thank you for coming in on with an emergency situation going on. I hope everything's okay.
No, that's okay.
I'm
just in Indiana for a few days, but I'll be back in Maryland soon, so.
Okay, I really appreciate that. Appreciate you doing that. So if you could tell me a little bit about your background in the business, because you've been in for a long time, and want to just start going through some questions for buyers, you know, when they're looking and sellers, et cetera, especially focusing on buyers first. Tell us a little about what you've done.
Well, I'm a mortgage broker, which means that we actually represent lots of different banks. So lots of different lenders contract with us to originate and structure financing for buyers, primarily in Maryland. And we represent about 30 different banks. I've been in the business since about 1999, I guess it's been. So quite a number of years. The market's, you know, definitely changed dramatically over that time. More challenging than ever, for sure.
It's so you come with lots and lots of years of experience, and you get to know from when we went back and FHA was changed. You know, so many laws and rules have changed through the different markets. So it really makes a difference when you have been in a while and can see the changes. So just say I'm a buyer and I haven't bought a home before. I'm just going to use an example. What would you recommend? Because they can just Google and get a pre-qual, but there's so many things that come up.
Well, the first thing to do is to find a reputable lender, obviously. And most good realtors have several lenders that they're familiar with or that they've worked with that they can recommend to their clients, people that they know are going to do a good job for their clients. Hopefully one of those is us. But the first thing to do is to get pre-qualified. We do always encourage people to find out what they can afford, what type of loan product they would qualify for that best suits their needs. And generally, we look for what the client wants. We want to see, you know, what price range are they looking for, or more importantly, what payment range are they comfortable with. And then we try to find a product that, like I said, best suits their needs. based on, you know, what their circumstances are, how much money they have to put down, what area they're looking to buy in. But that's really the first step, because that will give them and their realtor a good idea of, you know, what they want to look for, what price range, and that's, like I said, that's a good place to start.
Do you find a lot of, you know, that's a good place to start, because then they're going to pull their credit report or you're going to pull it, which is the best to do? Do you find that there's a lot, maybe they have issues on their credit reports that they weren't even aware of, a lot of situations where it's not even their discrepancy or something was taken care of a long time ago and that's going to need to be corrected? Do you see that happening a lot?
I do, and honestly, that's why we really encourage people to get pre-qualified before they look for houses, so that we can really see what's on their credit. I mean, if there's issues there, we can work with them to try and figure out ways to, you know, correct issues that might be there, so that we can get their credit scores up or help them to qualify for financing. But the lender, whatever lender you work with, has to pull the credit. You can't pull your own. I know there's a lot of sources out there like Credit Karma and a TransUnion and the other credit bureaus offer credit reports to clients directly, but the lenders can't use those. The credit report has to be in the lender's name for them to be able to originate the loan for you. So it's really best to just start with a lender, let them pull your credit, and then let them advise you on you know, what you can do.
So I have a question for you. If they if somebody says they want to buy and they know they want to be and they know they're going to buy, if they go ahead and do a 3-in-1 credit report just to make sure there aren't any old things on there, will that hurt
right.
their score at all?
Well, it depends. If someone's credit scores are low or marginal, if several people pull their credit reports, it could make the credit scores drop. But if somebody has really good credit, if you're a borrower and your credit scores are already in the upper 700s or in the high range, it really isn't going to make much difference. If your credit scores are low, the issue is to the credit scoring systems of the credit bureaus, it looks like you're desperate and you're searching for money, it can make your scores go down. So
okay.
When you're looking to get pre-approved, don't call 10 different lenders. We would encourage you to, you know, maybe pick one or two and allow them to check your credit. You don't want to have too many people pulling credit reports.
Okay, so step one is definitely, and they could pull theirs just to make sure it's clean, especially if somebody has a name like John Smith, right, that may be
many, many people. Oh, sure.
Many,
I mean, they can
pull
their own if they want. We just can't use it for the pre-approval process. So.
Right, and then come to you, and then because if there were to be any issues on the report, it would take, 30, 60-plus days to correct that possibly? Or is there a quicker way to do it?
It depends what it is. I mean, some things we can do what's called a rapid rescore. So some things that borrowers can get us proof that something that's on the credit is an error or it's already been paid, we can send that to our credit company and have it updated in a couple of days. If it's something the borrower needs to work on themselves, you know, like they've had a lot of late payments on accounts, something like that just takes time. You need to bring the account current and continue to pay it on time, and as you do so every month, your score is going to tick up a little bit each month.
Okay, so then the rapid rescore, so then definitely get in. And let's give your contact information right now, too.
Sure.
So people, okay.
A couple ways to reach me. You can reach me direct by phone at 410-239-9802, extension 102. That's actually my office number. Or they can reach me on our website, which is www.mortgage1llc.com, and one is spelled out, so onellc.com.
That's fantastic. Now, we do have a lot of listeners in Maryland, but we have listeners in other areas, too. Are you able to refer them to other lenders in other areas or specifically stick
we
in Maryland?
We definitely can. We definitely have a referral source of other brokers that we can refer people to. We have a main source on the East Coast that can help us with borrowers in most of the states on the East Coast, and then we have a referral network that we can refer people to nationwide as well.
Okay, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. So
yeah.
Well, because it's really, you know, everybody Googles these days, you know, and I've been in the business 30 years and used, but for people that haven't been in, you know, everyone Googles and, you know, they may just go ahead and start pulling report, you know, pulling and saying, let me do a pre-approval here, pre-approval there, and mess up things. So it's really good to know firsthand. So say a person, if they're going in to buy, How do they decide if they say they have some cash or they don't have cash? Do you look at the whole picture and say, find out if they're a veteran? What are the different ways when they first come in? You're going to ask them a lot of questions, I would imagine, like a buyer's checklist.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good definitely. Okay. I mean, that's a good point. That's a good, like I said, we really want to try and tailor the loan product to the borrower's needs. So, again, the first thing to do is we pull their credit report to see what their credit scores are, because the credit scores will dictate what loan products the borrower might be eligible for. Once we know that, then we need to find out how much do the borrowers have to work with as a down payment. And that might limit the products that are they're eligible for as well. But what a lot of people don't realize, too, is a lot of people think they need a lot of money down, and that's really not the case. There are several loan programs that still allow the borrowers to put no money down at all. So if they have 20% to put down, that's great. There's certainly loan products for those folks, but for the folks that don't have the 20%, there's still lots of other things available as well.
What would you say, just off the top of your head, would be the lowest score someone could have to get a loan?
580 is what most of our lenders require. And different lenders have different overlays. So even though the loan product itself, for example, an FHA loan, which is insured by HUD, requires a 3.5% down payment, and they will allow a 580 credit score, a lot of retail lenders, if you go directly to a bank, they'll still require 620 or 640 as a credit score. So that's part of the advantage of working with us as a broker, is that we have access to lots of different lenders. And we have lenders that will do FHA loans at a 580 credit score. Actually, quite a few of them now. So,
oh, that's fantastic.
We have more. There's more alternatives than there used to be.
So now, how much down? 3.5%. Well, how much down do they need for an FHA loan?
3.5% is the minimum. So whatever your purchase price is, 3.5% they would need as a down payment. And again, that could be their own money, but it's also allowed to be a gift from a family member. So. If someone's young and just starting out, they don't necessarily have the 3.5% of their own. If mom and dad could maybe give them that money as a gift, they can certainly do that. And then FHA allows the seller to pay all of the closing costs. So theoretically, on an FHA loan, they could buy with just the 3.5%. If you can negotiate for the seller to pay the closing costs for them, the 3.5% would be all they'd need.
That's fantastic. So on the 3.5%, the whole amount can be a gift, or does part of it have to be some of their own money?
No, the entire 3.5% could actually be a gift. And again, that's just for FHA. There are other loan products that require no money down at all. The Veterans Administration still allows the borrower to put no money down, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture has a product that allows no money down as well.
And then seller can pay the closing costs. That's fantastic.
Same thing. Yeah, on both those products, the seller can pay the closing costs. The VA loan allows the seller to pay up to 4% of the sales price towards closing costs, which in most areas is going to be enough to cover, you know, all or most of the closing. And FHA allows the seller to pay up to 6% of the sales price towards closing, which should definitely be enough to cover all your closing costs in most areas.
Wow, that's fantastic. Yeah, that's really now with the FHA, just okay, so a 580 score could be doable. I mean, if with you all. And it's really great because you're a mortgage broker, so you actually work with a lot of different banks. And so the FHA loan, now with FHA loan, are there limits in different areas? How do they find out about the limits? Do they just contact you directly, contact the lenders when they're looking at this?
Well,
I'm asking
in general,
questions that I kind of know from being in the business, but I want to hear. I want our listeners to hear from you because you're, you know, the.
Different counties have different agency limits, and what I mean by agency is the general loan limit is $417,000. That's allowed across the country for FHA. So as long as your loan amount doesn't exceed $417,000, you can do that anywhere. There are some high balance limits in other areas of the country where you can go higher. So, for example, in Maryland, much of the state, you can go up to $517,500. And that varies by state. If you go over $417,000 as the loan amount, the interest rate is slightly higher because your loan amount exceeds that general loan limit. But you can go to those higher amounts if your state or your county that you're in allows it.
That's fantastic. So somebody's trying to, they haven't bought first yet. They're going to get their credit, make sure the credit's good, get the pre-approval, look at their, situation, when would you recommend the FHA versus, say, a USDA loan, VA loan? If somebody, say, is a veteran and they have a choice of doing a VA loan, an FHA, or a USDA, what would you recommend and why?
Oh, definitely the VA loan. The VA loan has no monthly mortgage insurance at all, and it's 100% financing. So literally you need no money down, and there's no insurance required by the lender to back the loan. On an FHA loan or a USDA loan, you do have to pay monthly mortgage insurance. So no matter what, your net payment on the VA loan is going to be lower than either of the other options, and it requires no down payment at all. The only disadvantage is, obviously, you definitely have to be a veteran to qualify for the VA loan. So for folks that aren't veterans, they're going to have to look at one of those other options.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So would you, and then if they said they have 20% down, would you recommend they go with a conventional loan, or depending on the price range, or if they could do FHA, or say they can't do VA, but they can do FHA or USDA, which, and they have 20% down, would you recommend using that money or not?
Well, yeah, I mean, especially if their credit scores are higher, if you can put 20% down, you avoid paying any monthly mortgage insurance, which is nice. Just anytime the borrower puts down less than 20% on any loan program other than VA, you have to pay mortgage insurance. Oh, well, and on an FHA, too. I misspoke. On FHA or VA, you have to pay mortgage insurance regardless. But on other types, if you can get away with not having to pay the mortgage insurance, it's going to save you a lot of money, and you're going to get a better interest rate a lot of times. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. So you would say go ahead and use it. Because now on an FHA, years back they had, I think it was years back, well, you had mortgage insurance, and then for a while through the boom, the real estate boom, before it went bust, they changed the FHA, I think, where you could, after 20%, 22% down, you could get rid of the mortgage insurance, and then they brought it back, right? So you would have to,
to
refinance. Yeah.
Exactly. On FHA now, you have to pay mortgage insurance for the life of the loan. So it used to be once you had 22% equity in the property, the mortgage insurance went away, and as the insurance fund has gotten short of funds, they've changed that requirement. Now you have to pay the mortgage insurance for the life of the loan. So
okay. The
only way, as you said, to get rid of the mortgage insurance at some point on an FHA loan would be to refinance. Back to your other question about the 20% down, the only reason you wouldn't want to use a conventional loan if you have 20% down is if your credit scores are lower. On conventional financing, there's pricing adjustments based on the borrower's credit score. So, for example, the highest credit score threshold is 740. So if your credit scores are 740 or above, you're going to qualify for the best pricing available on a conventional loan. But the lower your credit scores are, the higher the adjustments are to the pricing of that loan, and the higher the interest rate to the borrower would be. So for someone, example, that has a 620 credit score on a conventional loan, your interest rate might end up being so high that it would offset the benefit of using that product. And then we might want to look at a different loan type, even though there is mortgage insurance, because on the FHA loan, the interest rate is going to be dramatically less at a lower credit score.
That makes a lot of sense. What would be the minimum credit score they would need to go to conventional?
Well, conventional requires 620, but again, there's a point of diminished return on conventional loans. I mean, once the borrower's credit score drops much below 700, there are huge adjustments to the pricing, and the rate goes up a lot.
Okay, so if it's over 700,
we always do a comparison for folks. Excuse me?
That is so cool. I mean, that's so neat that you're explaining this in detail, because most people would never think about these things, you know? They're just going to go and say, okay, I'll take this loan or take that loan. So if the 620 is the minimum, if they have, like, over 700, it could be better, but 740 and above is going to be much better rates on the conventional, from what you're saying, right?
Well, 740 is the highest credit threshold for any mortgage product at all. So on conventional, especially if your credit score is 740 or higher, you're going to qualify for the best pricing available for that product type. But again, the lower your credit score is, the higher the interest rate.
Okay, that makes sense. That's Okay, so say a buyer is trying to decide between doing a 15-year mortgage or a 30-year mortgage. What do you think about that?
Well, if they can afford the payment, we would always encourage them to do the 15-year loan. And you know, a lot of times we'll run amortization schedules for the borrowers so that they can compare the 15 and the 30-year option. You save a lot of money over the life of the loan by doing a 15-year loan. I mean, literally it could be hundreds of thousands of dollars depending on the purchase price of the house. So if you're okay with the payment, it's going to save you a huge amount of money, you know, over the life of that loan. And the interest rates on the 15-year loans are quite a bit lower than they are on a 30-year loan as well.
The interest rate's going to be lower, so you're going to actually have a larger payment that's going to pay it off. What if somebody wants to get a 30-year loan and pay it off in 15 and make extra payments?
You definitely can. There's no prepayment penalties on conventional loans anymore. So
okay.
If a borrower does a 30-year loan and wants to add whatever extra amount each month, they just want to designate that on their payment coupon, that they want that money to go towards the principal of the loan and not towards the escrow account or anything else. And then the bank would apply that towards the balance of the loan, and they can pay the loan down more quickly. The only disadvantage there is if you do the 30-year loan, initially you're going to be at a higher interest rate than if you'd done the 15-year loan to start. So even
okay.
though you're applying extra money towards your principal, you're applying it towards your principal at a higher interest rate. So it's still going to take you longer to pay it off on the 30-year loan.
If you
pay the exact same payment on the 30-year loan that you pay on the 15, it's still going to take you longer to pay it off because your rate's higher.
Okay. I see what you're saying. That makes sense. Wow, this is good information. This is awesome information. Again, this is Natalie Mullenix with Realty Universal, and we have Steve Lovelett on the line with Mortgage One in Maryland talking to us about choosing which is the best loan for you, which is the best program for you, how do you find a good lender. Now, are there when somebody's looking for a lender, is there anything, I mean, they're going to choose, I mean, when they go and they Google, what are the parameters to say, hey, this is a good company, this isn't a good company? I mean, I know there's so many regulations out there that most people are protected these days, but is there any recommendations you can make on that? Of course, we want them to come
well,
home too in Maryland.
Well, yes, definitely. We would really encourage people not to Google. You know, the problem is you don't know who you're getting. So you really want to use somebody that's recommended by a close friend or family member or coworker, somebody that's used this lender before that's had a good experience with them, or ask your realtor for a recommendation of who to use. Because you want somebody that someone else can tell you is a reputable lender that knows what they're doing. Yeah, there's too many of us out there, unfortunately, and it's just hard to know that you're getting the right lender or somebody who knows what they're doing unless you get a good recommendation from someone else. And Google's not going to do that for you, so...
And usually people know a lot of people. You know, we know agents, brokers, and, yeah, they know a lot of people typically. But,
oh, sure.
So, you know, I found, because I've been in this 30 years in the real estate industry, and I find that I take for granted what people, I think people would know, you know, because when we do it as long, it's like you've done it so long too, a long time, it's, we take it for granted that, you know, everybody knows the changes, and they don't, and the loans are changing fast. What's your opinion? I mean, I'm not trying to put you on the spot with this, and definitely not politically, but with what happened in 2008 and the crisis, and different changes have come in, and I've watched it as a real estate broker having to do short sales, say in 08, 09, 10, 11, and it was easier. Lenders were taking less than they are now. We're seeing more and more lenders wanting market value. Some of the lenders in some states are actually renting the properties out and keeping it in long term. What's your take on the changes? Do you really see where the changes have really helped? Because I personally thought some of them made it harder, but now they're starting to clean it out. What's your opinion from where we were in 08 to now and the guidelines? Are they helping now, or are they getting...
Well, immediately after the banking crisis, the lending guidelines tightened up dramatically. And I think a lot of folks would say they really tightened up way too much. They made it really restrictive for people to have access to money to be able to buy homes. And we're seeing now that a lot of that is starting to loosen up. As I said, a lot of individual retail lenders, for example, on the FHA loan, still require 640 or 660 credit scores. We do have access now to lenders that are allowing much lower scores. So the money is becoming more readily available for people to buy houses, and there are more products that are slowly coming back on the market. But the people that we saw that were most affected was really self-employed borrowers. There were stated income products for a long time, and they were designed for folks that were self-employed, and that all went away immediately after the banking crisis, and that really made it very restrictive for a lot of self-employed people to be able to purchase homes. None of that has come back as of yet, but slowly but surely, products are becoming more readily available.
Now, that's a good point. On the stated loans and the low doc, no income, et cetera, I get emails constantly that say that some of those programs are still around. I don't know if it's just from other states. What are you, what have you heard about that they're just...
I've not really seen any of that, particularly in Maryland. And actually, for it to be considered a qualified mortgage under the government's new qualified mortgage rules, you're not allowed to do any kind of stated income or no ratio or no doc loans at all. So...
Because I am hearing that in different areas, and more on investment properties, not principal residence. So,
well, investor properties aren't considered, or investor loans, not for investment properties specifically, but for commercial loans, those are not considered qualified mortgages. So there are different criteria for commercial loans than there are for residence loans. Is that maybe what you're thinking of? Or?
Maybe. Well, I'm just getting emails, and we see different things. Like they say in Florida, you can do some things with 20% down.
Okay.
You can do this, do that.
Yeah,
you know, just different things I'm seeing,
because
we deal
all,
with people all over the country, even though the brokerage is in Maryland and Hawaii. But I haven't gotten really involved in it. But, yeah, because it's
That's
really,
a good sign. Now, I'm hoping that there's more things will become more available as the market, you know, normalizes.
I would hope so. Now, can you do commercial loans too, and or strictly all residential? Or
we just do residential. Commercial is a completely different animal.
Okay.
They're underwritten completely differently. And we have access to them. We just choose not to do them. We focus on
which makes
homes.
Sense.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what we want to talk about today. So that's perfect. The So they come to you, they go in. I'm trying to think, any other types of loans they should look at? What about, I know what I wanted to ask you. What's your feeling on the fixed rates versus the adjustable rates, and why would somebody want to go with an adjustable these days?
I personally don't ever encourage anybody to do adjustable rate loans, particularly in this market. Interest rates are already so low right now. They're still at historic lows. So anybody who's looking to buy now is definitely still a great time. Interest rates on FHA loans and USDA loans are still in the high threes. Conventional loans you can get in the low fours.
Mm-hmm.
So interest rates are really good even for fixed rate products. And there's really not much of a disparity, I don't think, between the fixed rates and the ARM rate loans. And what concerns me most about the ARMs is that interest rates really don't have anywhere to go but up. I don't think it's really likely that interest rates are going to drop any more than they already are. So if you do get an adjustable rate loan that's fixed for 3 or 5 years, at the end of that term, I think it's almost certain that your interest rate would end up going up. And that's why I generally don't recommend them.
That's a great answer. That makes a lot of sense. So if... Now, people want to do second home loans, I guess, too. Is there anything to learn about that that's important on a second loan?
Second homes, really, the underwriting's not any different than it is on a primary residence. The down payment requirements are the same. The interest rates are the same on second homes as they are on a primary residence. It just has to make sense to the underwriter that it is going to be a second home. So they generally want to see that the property's in some kind of vacation or resort destination. Where the lending criteria changes dramatically is when the property becomes an investment property instead of a second home. An investment property requires at least a 20% down payment. The interest rates are a lot higher. The lending guidelines are a lot more restrictive.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. What about the on adjustables? I thought about something I wanted to ask. When they have you have those adjustables where they're fixed for 5 years and then they change, or they're fixed for 7 years and change. Is there any scenarios that may work for somebody with that? Would that be based on them using it, say, if they can't qualify the other way? their title qualifies.
Well, no, where I think the ARM products benefit is if somebody's certain that they're going to be moving within a specified period of time, if somebody's buying a home and they know that their company's going to transfer them on X date or they're going to retire within so many years and they plan on moving to, you know, whatever location, then an ARM product, I think, might be the better option because the interest rate is going to be lower and they're certain that they're going to move within that specified time. But
okay.
Otherwise, I generally still recommend the fixed rate loans because, again, the interest rates are just so low right now.
That's fantastic. So it's like, and the because because you're able to broker out, you can you just got to have a product almost for everything, really. It sounds like you're able.
Well, exactly. Like I said, we personally represent about 30 different banks. There's, you know, many, many of them out there. We just choose the ones that we think best service our customers. And each of those individual banks has their own individual product overlays or guidelines and their own individual programs that they offer that maybe a different bank doesn't. And that's part of the benefit of using different lenders is, you know, a good example is the credit score. Again, some lenders require a 580 credit score for a specific loan product, and others require, you know, 620 or 640 or 660. So, again, depending on the borrower's specific criteria, it tells us what bank we should target and who might be able to help us for that individual borrower.
So let me, that's fantastic. Let me give you a scenario. So somebody just had a, had to do a short sale. So many people have been through short sales in the last, you know, since 2008, much more than what the norm used to be years ago. So say they just had a short sale, and they, you know, their credit was perfect before the short sale. They unfortunately had to go through the short sale, or even a bankruptcy. And now they're coming back out and they want to buy. What's the criteria on that?
Well, the least restrictive loan program is going to be FHA, and that's going to require a wait period of 3 years. So from the date of the short sale event, you have to wait 3 years before you're allowed to apply for new mortgage financing.
3 years from a short sale, okay.
3 years, exactly. Now, FHA does have an extenuating circumstance guideline that will allow you to purchase in less than 3 years of the short sale, but you have to meet whatever the extenuating circumstance guidelines are. And they're generally looking for something like you had to sell the house because of domestic abuse, or it has to be something pretty significant. You can't just say that, you know, you got divorced or you just couldn't afford it anymore.
What about job loss?
And that doesn't meet the extenuating circumstance guideline generally. You have
really?
To show... Well, if you can show that the person lost their job for an extended period of time and was not able to find new employment, then they may be eligible to meet that extenuating circumstance guideline. And again, each individual lender, even though FHA allows that, each individual lender has their own overlays for what they will or will not allow. So I have a couple of banks that are pretty liberal on that.
So when you say that maybe earlier, how much earlier? 1 year, 2 years?
There is
after
no specific guideline. It's just that if you can meet the extenuating circumstance guideline and you otherwise credit qualify, then you can apply, you know, whenever.
Wow. So that, because
of those that I've been able to get through. I mean, I did have one, and that's the reason I mentioned domestic abuse. I had a situation where that had occurred, and I was able to get that financing done.
Oh, that's so sad, isn't it? It's horrible. No, it's horrible when you see that. And years ago, I remember in the 80s getting somebody through. He was stabbed a bunch of times. He was walking and got mugged got stabbed a bunch of times, and he had to file bankruptcy, and it was clearly because of, you know, all the hospital doctor bills, et cetera, and they gave him a loan.
That is actually one of the extenuating circumstances that they allow. If you have a major medical event that causes you to be off work for an extended period of time, that does generally qualify you for the extenuating circumstance to be able to apply in less than 3 years.
So when somebody comes in and they have that extenuating circumstance, can you go ahead and package the loan and do everything and get them fully approved before they even start looking at homes in case that it's not going to fly in a situation like that? I would imagine before somebody
wants to
go out and write a contract.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, I mean, normally we're responsible for pre-approving the loan, but
right.
I do have some lender, if you want an actual full approval from the bank directly, I have a few banks that will allow you to submit as a to-be-determined property. In other words, most banks don't want to underwrite the loans until you have a specific property under contract. But some banks, depending on how busy they are, they will allow us to submit it without a specified property, and they'll underwrite the loan fully and, you know, tell us for certain that we wouldn't have an issue.
Wow. That's really good. That's really good to It's just I can see because a lot of lenders do want a contract before they start the file, right? And that's the problem if somebody doesn't want to tie somebody up if all of a sudden they're not going to get this loan, you know?
Well, through this summer, the market has really picked back up pretty dramatically, and a lot of the lenders have got kind of far behind. I mean, typically lenders were 2 or 3 business days for underwriting from the day they received the file. Over the summer, as the market picked up a lot, we had lenders that were, you know, 10, 12, 14 business days before they underwrote the loan. And they got so far behind with people that were actually under contract that they didn't want to look at files that didn't have properties identified as of yet.
So what do? You have to place them with those couple of people. If you have somebody who did have extenuating circumstances, it hasn't been 3 years, and maybe it's been a year, and they want to go ahead and file and try to get a house, what do you recommend? Because they're kind of stuck. It's kind of like, do they ask an agent broker to, you know, find him a home, and they put a contract in, but then they've got a seller there that's thinking this is a good deal with a pre-approval, and it may not be? What do you recommend?
Well, no, we have a contract at all of the end. You know, most of the lenders we work with because they'll communicate with us and work with us and help us figure out how to get things done for folks. So,
okay.
You know, all the lenders have a point of contact that we can reach, generally an underwriting manager or a risk manager that we can send the borrower's credit report to and the letter and the documentation that would support the extenuating circumstance for them to review. And they would verbally tell us whether or not they would be willing to do the loan. And generally, they'll email back to us and confirm that, yes, you know, if you can document what's in the borrower's explanation, then we can get this done for you. So we don't necessarily need to submit for a full underwrite. We have other options.
Okay. So, again, this is Steve Levelet with Mortgage One, and let's get your contact information again.
Again, my phone number is 410-239-9802, and I'm extension 102, or you can reach me through our website at www.mortgageonellc.com, and one is spelled out.
Do you think these interest rates are going to go up? I know that's a loaded question. It's almost like they have to, right? That's what everybody says in the economy. We've got all these trillions of dollars of debt. What's your opinion on it?
Well, I do. I mean, most of our lenders issue forecast reports of what they think is likely to happen, and a lot of times they're wrong as much as they're right, and a lot of times they contradict one another. Right now, all of the lenders' forecast reports are saying they think interest rates are going to continue to trend up, and I think that only makes sense. I don't think they have anywhere to go but either stay basically where they are or go up. I don't think it's likely they're going to drop anymore, barring some significant international event. I don't think they have anywhere to go but up.
I agree with you, but I'll tell you, being in the industry since 85, these are like, it's just like free money to me, even though it's not free money. It's just, you know, they pay it back, but the rates are so low. And I was got in the days when they were just coming out of 18 and 14%. When I got in, I got blessed, and it was about 10 and a half, 9.5. Anytime we saw 8.5 or 9, everybody was thrilled. I mean, most of the houses I bought in my 20s and early 30s, it was all 9.5% with good credit. You know, it was just that was what the rates were. And so when we got down to the 8s and then 6s, I couldn't believe it. And it's so funny for me to hear people say, oh, no, it's going up. Or like 5% is too high. I'm not going to pay 4.5. I just am amazed, you know, that it stayed this long, actually.
Well, I think we've all gotten spoiled, unfortunately.
I think everybody's spoiled now. Nobody wants to pay the extra. I agree. I think everybody's spoiled. So, you know, I'm on your website right now, and there's a ton of great information. And your website, again, is mortgageonellc.com. There's a ton of information if people want to go on here and look. And I see you've got information about best loans, type of loans, credit reporting. You've got the Mortgage Center. This is really good.
It's actually a good resource for folks that are first-time buyers. But there's a lot of information in there about mortgage terms and different types of loan products. And it gives people an opportunity to look on there and see what's actually available and what each of the loans they may or may not qualify for based on what they think they're personal criteria are. So it's a good place to start and look.
That's fantastic. So there's a lot to go through here. So So the people that are self-employed, I guess, what do they do? They have to still show 2 years of income, right? It's a different world for people self-employed right now, isn't it?
Well, yeah, the full documentation is the only option. And for borrowers that are self-employed, the lenders want to see 2 years of tax returns. If your income went up from 2013 to 2014, for example, they'll take an average of the 2 years' earnings. If your income went down from 2013 to 2014, the banks will just use what you made in 2014.
Oh, they will. Okay, so they're going to take the lesser, actually. Higher.
If it's going up, they average.
The
if it's going down, they take the lesser, yeah.
Oh, okay. And, you know, one thing I want to mention just to throw out there, because I've seen it happen many times, where people, and we always tell people when they're buying a house, don't go buy a car right now. Don't take out other loans. Just, do you pull the report the day before, the day of sometimes? I mean, give us a little bit of, I'm sure you've had scenarios where you educate people to say, don't do anything while you're doing this process, right? Anything else to lower your, to cause more debt to come in? Did I lose you? Let's see here. I think we lost Steve. Will call right back. So we're going to take a quick break. We've got that quick question that just came out. I just want to find out what Steve's take is on that, because they say don't do anything when you're just getting ready to get the loan. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. This is Natalie Malenix with Realty Universal Radio, and we have Steve Lovelett on with Mortgage One. I love technology. It's so awesome. We can all call in from everywhere, but it's not always perfect, so glad to get you right back. So,
thank you. Sorry about that.
No problem. We're used to the technology little glitches nowadays, everybody's. So back to the question I was asking before we were off, what's your opinion on, and what would you like to recommend to people so that when they are going in the loan process, which I'm sure you always recommend it, but I've seen it still happen time and time again, they decide to buy a car or they take out other credit or, you know, this scenario, and then, you know, they've gotten a loan approval, they think they're ready to buy, and then, whoops, right before closing, something happens.
Right. Well, we would always encourage, once you've applied for your financing for your new home, try to abstain from opening any new accounts or, buying it, making any significant purchases until you close on your loan for certain, because the banks don't necessarily all pull new credit reports at the end, but they do what's called an LQI. An LQI basically is the bring to date. It shows the lender if you've opened a new account or if anybody's obtained copies of your credit report since you started the process with them. They can't necessarily see what it is you opened or who pulled the report, but they know that it happened, and then they'll question it, and you have to verify exactly, you know, what you did. And we've had that happen before where people have purchased a home and, you know, they qualified fine, and then, as you said, they went out and bought a car, and suddenly their debt ratio didn't work anymore, and it created a problem for them in purchasing the home.
So you called it an LQY?
LQI. Yeah,
LQI.
I'm not exactly sure, certain what it stands for. That's what shows up on the lender's
I know, I'm
loan approvals. But are they pretty much
pulled like the day before? I mean, I've had situations where people we tell them don't do it, and some people don't listen, and they just they pull them what, a week before or a couple days usually?
Within 5 days of closing, generally.
Okay, and is it pretty standard
so
all the time now?
They are going to check towards. Yeah, almost every bank we work with on every loan, they pull those at the very end. And there are banks that actually pull full credit reports at the end again. We don't personally use any of those specific lenders, but all the other lenders that we do use still pull those LQI reports that I was telling you about. And it's gonna show if you've had any other lenders obtain copies of your credit reports and or if you've opened any new accounts. So you're better off just not doing anything from the time you purchase the house until you close to make sure that there won't be any issues.
Wow, that's really good to know. I've seen it happen before. Somebody says, or maybe they move funds around. Oh, you know, one of the questions I wanted to ask is seasoning on monies. People, they have to have, tell us what, like for example, you had mentioned an FHA now, they can have all the 3.5% down by gift funds, which is pretty awesome. Do they need any reserves or anything, or they can, are they pretty much, they can
it,
have their cellophane closed?
It depends on the circumstances. If we obtain an automated approval, and what I mean by that is we're online with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and their computer system literally underwrites the loans to the borrowers. And if it comes back and they give us an approval, you generally don't need any payment reserves. If an underwriter's manually underwriting the file, in other words, we can't get that approval, but we still think the file warrants approval, an underwriter has the right to manually underwrite the loan. And a lot of times when they manually underwrite, then they do ask for payment reserves, again, dependent on the circumstances and dependent on the bank. So generally they want to see 2 months on an FHA loan if it's manually underwritten.
Okay, so 2 months of seasoning. They want to see that they want
two months
of reserves. They want to know they have the money of 2 months in the future, 2 months of a reserve. What about the seasoning, the money that has to be in their bank if they are supposed to have a certain amount of down payment? How long does
it
have to be?
If it's not a gift, if it's their own money, it has to be in your account for at least 60 days. And the other big issue we run into now is sourcing of deposits. So, you know, borrowers have to provide their last 2 months' bank statements to verify that they've had the money in their account available to close on the loan. Well, a lot of times people have deposit payroll or some other direct deposit source. Anytime that happens, we have to source where that money came from now. In other words, we have to show the bank where you got that money from.
They want
to
make sure it's not drug money, right?
Show up in your account
anymore.
Say that again?
They want to make sure it's not drug money, out of the country money, illegal money. That's the purpose, right?
Literally, that's exactly what they're looking for.
It's
not cash you had in a drawer at home or...
Yeah,
because most
programs
don't allow cash on hand. It has to be your own money, and you have to show where you got it from to be able to use it for the mortgage transaction.
Wow, this has been so enlightening. Can you believe we only have about 10 minutes left? I told you it was going to fly by, right?
I appreciate you having me on.
It's so enlightening. We're still going to roll, if it's okay with you, because it goes by fast. I do want to throw something out there to people. If you're getting gift money, and this is just from being a broker for so many years, if your relatives are saying they're going to give you gift monies or whomever, now this gift money, does it have to be from a relative or can it be from anybody?
No, they generally want it to be from a relative or some close relation. So you just have to establish what the relationship is and how that person's related to you. And that's part of the reason we use different lenders. Some of our lenders are much more restrictive about that, indicating that it has to be an immediate family member. I have other lenders that will allow it to come from more distant relatives. They'll allow funds from cousins or brothers-in-law or more distant relations.
Do they have to season that money, or they just care about, they just write a gift letter?
No, gift money doesn't have to be seasoned at all. A lot of the banks do want sourcing of the gift. So some banks will say that the donor has to provide a copy of their bank statement. Most retail lenders require that. Most of our lenders, though, do not. And what we'll do is have the donor wire the money from their account either to the title company or to the borrower's account. And when the funds are wired, the banks don't require any kind of sourcing of the funds. They use the wire confirmation as proof that the person had funds to give.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, one thing I want to say out there, though, is if you're going to get a gift, get it now. Get it now. Don't, like, say, okay, they're going to give it to me right before we close, because we've seen scenarios over the years where everybody has good intentions and then somebody ends up in an argument or the relative changes their mind and the whole deal can fall apart. So it's really wise.
Well, I actually have a transaction I'm doing right now, and the borrower is supposed to get a gift from her sister for the down payment, and I'm not certain what happened, but the sister now doesn't have the funds to give, so our borrower's scrambling around trying to find somebody else to gift her the funds so that she can close. So
yeah.
You're right, that definitely happens.
Get it away. Get it in the beginning. Get it right away so that you can move forward with the least amount of obstacles, right? Least amount of obstacles.
Right, exactly.
But I tell you, I love the old days where you really did have underwriters look at a file and look at situations. I really liked it better before the scoring days. It seems like, and that, I think the scoring probably started in the mid-90s. Don't quote me on the day, but month and year, but I think it was around the mid-90s. Everything changed. So I guess scoring in a sense makes it easier on one hand, but it kind of pigeonholes people in some things in another way, right? But it sounds like with what you're doing, you have a lot of access to lenders that will look at other options. So
yeah, my concern about the credit scoring is there's no gray area or common sense. It's very black and white. If your score is X, you qualify for whatever. If your score is 1 point different, you might not qualify. And again, there's no gray area at all. It's not allowed. There's no interpretation from the underwriter allowed. So that's the disadvantage of the scoring. I mean, the reason they initiated the scoring process was people were claiming they were being disproportionately denied for credit and discriminated against. So now the lenders can point to the credit scoring system and say, you know, it's equal for everybody.
Right. Right. That makes sense. Wow. Yeah, it's just difficult. I hope they open it up for self-employed because we've got a lot of company owners out there and business owners, you know, and I know what it's like, you know, being a business owner. It's just, you know, and it's just really, I think just too many things were too loose before and now they're getting tight, but I guess it'll all even itself out, and hopefully home ownership stays for many, many moons to come. One thing that we do have in the United States that's heaven is we get the tax write-off. You know, we take things for granted, and here in the United States, we can write off our interest on our tax, and there's many countries where you can't do that. So that's a biggie.
Well, that's
actually
a great point. You know, I have lots of clients who call that are first-time buyers, and they're currently renting, paying, you know, $1,500 or $2,000 a month in rent, and they look at houses that are, you know, $200,000, and we work up the payments for them, and the payment itself a lot of times is the same or not much more than they're paying in rent, but by the time you factor in the benefit of the tax benefit of owning the home, they're actually paying a lot less than what they were paying by renting.
Isn't it amazing? And it's like, why, if you're making $55,000 a year, give Uncle Sam $15,000 of that when you could be owning a house and taking you know, a third of that and putting it towards a house, right? I mean, you know, it's just
yeah,
amazing.
Exactly.
Amazing.
I mean, exactly.
But it's all knowledge, and there's so many things we don't know. Like, I wish I would have learned about compound interest when I was a kid. I really did. Mm-hmm. And they never told us about that when we were kids, so I just,
right.
I mean, you know, you look at it and go, oh, my gosh, there's so much to learn. This has been wonderful, and can you give your contact information again? This is Steve Lovelett. He's owner with Mortgage One LLC in Maryland.
Well, my direct phone number is 410-239-9802, and I'm extension 102, or you can reach me through our website at www.mortgageonellc.com, and again, the one is spelled out.
Wow, this has been great. Anything you'd like to tell people out there as a final thought? We covered so much today.
I mean, the most important thing is really that this is a great time to buy. There's still a lot of good deals out there to be had, and the interest rates are tremendously low, and there are good financing options available. Like I mentioned earlier, there's still lots of programs. There are several programs anywhere where borrowers don't have to put any money down. The seller can pay all of your closing costs. You could literally purchase a home with, you know, very little or no money out of pocket at all. So now's a great time.
Oh, I had one quick question. I forgot to ask about the VA. Something changed with VA, right? That before it used to be if you're a veteran and you want to buy with your husband, you'd have to be married if you put the other person on the loan. And something I think changed, right? If they have a partner or I'm not sure where you can have two people on a VA loan and one doesn't have to be a vet, but then they can't qualify for the full amount. Do you know, have you heard anything about that? Something
I've not. I mean, your spouse can be on the loan with you. Is that maybe what you mean?
No, or? No. I know this, that for VA, you can definitely have your husband or wife on the loan.
Right.
But I heard there's something that if somebody's not a vet, like if you buy a place, and because it used to be, it had to be, the only ones can be on the loan would be your spouse, right? Or
right.
Two vets.
Yes.
But if one right. person's a vet and the other's not a vet, I heard, I don't know what it is. It's something that they won't get the full benefit of the 100%, but they can get a portion of it. I don't know. That's something I heard, and I don't know if that's
I'm not sure. I can certainly confirm for you. I've not heard that, though, but I could definitely check for you.
Yeah, because that's what, you know, but that's the thing about this industry is that there's so many changes and so many things happening that you really need to go to somebody like you to be able to be covered, you know, and because there's just so much happening that none of us are going to know all of it, right? But it's really
important.
Well,
that's part of the reason,
covered.
As I mentioned earlier, you want to choose the lender that someone's referred you to, that they have direct working knowledge with, and they know what they're doing. I mean, as you said, the lending products and the guidelines are changing daily. It's actually difficult to keep up with, and you want to work with somebody who, you know, you're confident knows what they're doing, and they're going to be able to get your transaction closed when you're supposed to close.
That, yeah, absolutely. And you can do it. I know you can do it. I've been in long enough, I can tell. No,
yeah, well,
awesome.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, very much so. So, again, this is Steve Lovelett with Mortgage One LLC, and I'm Natalie Mullenix with Realty Universal Radio. To everybody out there, we hope you have a wonderful week, wonderful month, rest of the year, and I wish you peace.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.
Yeah, I don't. He's doing okay. I don't think he's tremendously busy though, and I'm sure he'd love to work with any, you know, referrals she could send his way.
Wow. Okay, I would love. Yeah, yeah, because we're looking for some agents to go under our brokerage, but we may just do referrals too, you know, because we work with affiliates. So, are you there? Did I lose you? Hello.